Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care, working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Every Sunday through Thursday, join us for a personal tour of Who's Reading the Organon, a show co-hosted by Vera Resnick and Debbie Bruck. We're challenging you to join us on our journey to complete Samuel Hahnemann's Organon in 1 year. Let's go.
Hi, I'm Debbie Bruck, founder of Homeopathy World Community, talking with classical homeopath Vera Resnick. Today is August 25, 2010, and you're listening to show number 79 of Who's Reading the Organon. We will be reading aphorisms number 58 and hopefully moving on to 59. We'll be doing a review of 58. We're going to start off with some enlightenment, something to pick us up and get us started, beginning with a quote from Mark Twain. Grief can take care of itself, but to get the full value of a joy, you must have somebody to divide it with. So reach out and touch someone. That's something I said, or maybe the telephone company and not Mark Twain. The second quote is also from Mark Twain. 20 years from now, you will be more disappointed by the things that you didn't do than by the ones you did do. So throw off the bow lines, sail away from the safe harbor, catch the trade winds in your sails, explore, dream, discover. And hopefully that's what we are all doing here together. And I also have another quote from Raymond Chandler, an American writer and author of detective fiction in the late 1800s, 1888 to 1959. He wrote, "The most durable thing in writing is style, and style is the most valuable investment a writer can make with his time. It pays off slowly. Your agent will sneer at it. Your publisher will misunderstand it. And it will take people you have never heard of to convince them by slow degrees that the writer who puts his individual mark on the way he writes will always pay off." And that kind of leads me right into telling you folks that there was a brand new newsletter put out last night, and I was hoping that everybody has received it. If you have not received it, send us a note. And also, there is a link on the front page if you want to just get the web version. I'm still waiting for Vera. And in the meantime, we'll go ahead. Maybe she's having trouble with the internet today. And talk about a little bit of what's going on the network on Homeopathy World Community. There is... she's saying that she's going to be here pretty soon, sending me a little note. There is a lot of activity on the network this week. I've posted a new video that's kind of a drama that highlights the story of Alzheimer's and how it affects an entire family and what it does to the memory, and that the fact that there are homeopathic remedies that are used for this condition. It's very much dealing with the brain and memory loss and kind of grieving loss of life. Then we have a bunch of articles continuing with Dr. Meir Saeed's article on diet and how homeopaths assist their patients with recommendations for improving diet. Also, to remind people to please put up their cured cases or just their case analysis so that Gary Weaver and Vladimir Poloni can take a look at them for winning the PNW Complete Repertory Computer Program. It's pretty exciting. that they're doing that. And there's quite a few more both forum discussions and blogs, personal blogs that people have done. Okay, we're still waiting for her. In the meantime, I'd like to also tell you that we are thinking and praying for those millions of people in Pakistan who are dealing with the flooding going on there. And so what can we do? I've sent out in the broadcast message a way for you to donate some funds to support them. Hopefully they will be restructuring in order to get the money to some good use. Dr. Waqar and Dr. Usmani have both been in touch with me from Pakistan, and perhaps we will be able to have a live radio show with them or some kind of a communication with them to hear what's going on. It's really quite devastating. All of the population has shifted to the cities of Karachi and a couple of those in that area. A message that I received from Dr. Usmani this morning says, I hope he gives me permission to quote him. My heart is weeping. I'm sitting in the comfort of my study, and a torrential rain is pouring outside. It is 7 in the morning, and 3/4 of the Pakistani populace, children, old people, women, sick and ailing, are sitting in the open fields and along the roads, and God's wrath, it seems, is in no mood of mitigating. People with infants and children sitting in the fields, flood water under their feet and drenching, pouring from the sky. A roof over the head is a great blessing. Here people are standing over the roofs of their houses. The first floor of every house is inundated. Mosques, roofs, and minarets are visible. First floors are under water. Where from these floods? Nobody knows. The ferocity of the flow of water in the streets can only be compared with the force and noise of water when it flows down the mountains in a hilly station. The pulse of the sensitive hearts beats in unison with the pulse of the universe. And so he says, one morning or any odd moment you feel pensive, depressed, and sad, and you don't know the cause. It may be just some cruelty being perpetrated or some nature's devastation is occurring in some corner of the universe. And I had written him some personal remarks to uplift his soul, and he said that these were heartfelt prophetic words for people who are in this situation. So the floods in Pakistan are some wee bit degree below Noah's deluge. And he asks everyone to pray for the people. I will check on the network now to see if anybody is listening to the radio station. And if they have any comments, you know, this is something that we can always read over the air. So we're still also waiting for Vera. She's having a little bit of trouble getting in. So also thankful to Bakshi. I don't really remember if, I think Bakshi might be coming from India, calling in from India, and he is reading for us aphorism number 58, so perhaps I shall just go ahead and do that. The antipathic method is wrong, he says, not only because it treats a single symptom of a disease, but also because it is followed by aggravation after apparent relief in protracted disease. Okay, so I think I will just review with us a little bit about the aphorism. Just run through it and people can make their comments. Okay. So I will begin with aphorism number 58. If in estimated the value of this mode of employing medicines, we should even pass over the circumstance that it is an extremely faulty symptomatic treatment, wherein the practitioner devotes his attention in a merely one-sided manner to a single symptom, consequently to only a small part of the whole, whereby relief for the totality of the disease, which is what the patient desires, cannot evidently be expected. We must, on the other hand, demand of experience if in one single case where such antipathic employment of medicine was made use of in a chronic or persisting affection, after the transient amelioration, there did not ensue an increased aggravation of the symptom, which was subdued at first in a palliative manner, an aggravation, indeed, of the whole disease. And every attentive observer will agree that after such short antipathic amelioration, aggravation follows, in capital letters, in every case without exception. Although the ordinary physician is in the habit of giving his patient another explanation of the subsequent aggravation and ascribes it to malignancy of the original disease, now for the first time showing itself, or to the occurrence of quite a new disease. And you can just imagine that if you have a force that pushes something down, which is what antipathic is against, it's suppressive, it's a force against another force, it's against your vital force to be throwing these symptoms up, to be healing, to find its own way to deal with whatever the morbific agent is, or the emotional trauma, whatever that might be. So if you imagine taking a ball and throwing it down to the ground, you're going to have, the ball is going to rebound, and sometimes it goes up higher than where you started. And this is kind of a description of what he's saying is going to happen. You're going to push that thing down, give that ball momentum down to the individual, push the symptoms down, and then when you release and remove the drug, there's going to be this secondary effect of rebound, what he's calling an increased aggravation of the symptom. And if it is a law of nature, this is the way nature reacts. This is like physics. It's going to happen whether you want it to or not. And he's saying it's extremely faulty thinking, symptomatic treatment to do it in this manner. And everybody has probably experienced an aggravation from a drug. And let's see, obviously I don't have Vera on the line to banter back and forth about it. And it's a little bit more difficult to just do a monologue. So there is also a footnote to that, which is written in Latin partially. It says, little as physicians have hitherto been in the habit of observing accurately, the aggravation that so certainly follows such palliative treatment could not altogether escape their notice. And he gives an example, and he says that the wine and cordials given to the weak increase the action without giving real strength, and powers of the body are afterwards sunk proportionally as they have been raised, by which nothing can be gained, but a great deal may be lost. So Rochelle's asking about Vera, where is she? And there's just no internet connection for her, so she can't get in. So if you think about it, a little drop of wine can give you some community, lively, active, extrovert type of behavior, and you do get to be active, but then it will definitely put you to sleep and you will lose consciousness. And continued taking of alcohol as a drug will create different kinds of effects, and we all are aware of them. So Vera has just about given up trying to get in. I suppose I could tell her to listen online, but then she probably can't get in to anything on the internet anyway. Okay. So these are examples, striking examples of what is right in front of the doctor, what is right in front of everybody's face. You can't miss it, and yet you still are not utilizing this basic principle. And it also, we also talked last time about the use of opiates and how it does help in relieving pains, but then once you remove it, there's going to be a need for continued higher and higher dosages. Okay. And then we're probably going to move on to aphorism number 59. And I will just go ahead and read that, and we'll probably review it again tomorrow. Let's see. I will look that up for us to read and continue on. So, aphorism number 59. Important symptoms of persistent diseases have never yet been treated with such palliative antagonistic remedies without the opposite state, a relapse, indeed, a palpable aggravation of the malady, occurring in a few hours afterwards. So here he's continuing on with the thought of aphorism number 58, and he's actually giving us, saying that it's going to occur quite rapidly within a number of hours. And so let's continue to read what he says. For a persistent tendency to sleepiness during the day, the physician prescribed coffee, which we all take, whose primary action is to enliven. And when it had exhausted its action, the day somnolence increased. For frequent waking at night, he gave in the evening, without heeding the other symptoms of the disease, opium, which by virtue of its primary action produced the same night, stupefied, dull, sleep. But the subsequent nights were still more sleepless than before. The chronic diarrhea he opposed, without regarding the other morbid signs, the same opium, whose primary action is to constipate the bowels, and after transient stoppage of the diarrhea, it subsequently became all the worse. Violent and frequently recurring pains of all kinds he could suppress with opium for but a short time. Then they always returned in greater, often intolerably severity, of some much worse affection came in their stead. And I don't know how many people have had this type of experience where in order to stop extreme amounts of diarrhea that were occurring, you were given a drug, which was an opiate drug. I'm trying to think of the name of it. I know that I had to give it to my little ones when they were young. And what that did was caused bowel obstruction because it basically stops any peristalsis. It stops any movement. It stops any action. The body's functions basically slow down almost to a stop. And it's helpful when there's a lot of pain, but and there's a lot of diarrhea, but you have to remember what is going to happen when you actually give a crude drug and how that affects the body. And he did actually use coffee, and I had also given this example of wine, which all of these drugs are very powerful. And I'm wondering, he doesn't have chocolate written down here, but chocolate also has caffeine, and it is a very powerful stimulant in many instances, and women just are addicted to it. So, continuing on, the nocturnal cough of long standing, the ordinary physician knew no better than to administer opium, whose primary action is to suppress every irritation. The cough would then perhaps cease the first night, but during the subsequent nights it would be still more severe. And if it were again and again suppressed by this palliative in increased dosage, fever and nocturnal perspiration were added to the disease. Weakness of the bladder, with consequent retention of urine, was sought to be conquered by the antipathic work of cantharides, 2, stimulate the urinary passages, whereby evacuation of the urine was certainly at first affected. But thereafter, the bladder becomes less capable of stimulation and less able to contract, and paralysis of the bladder is imminent, with large doses of purgative drugs and laxative salts, which excite the bowels to frequent evacuation. It was sought to remove a chronic tendency to constipation, but in this secondary action, it's like that ball that I was telling you about, and you throw it down, and then it's going to have a secondary effect. It's not only going to go down, it's going to come back up again. The bowels become still more confined. Let's see where we are. Okay, the ordinary physician seeks to remove chronic debility by the administration of wine, which, however, stimulates only in its primary action, and hence the forces sink all the lower in the secondary action. As an aside, how many of your doctors have told you to take wine as a health benefit or as a curative action to stimulate as in the primary course for some symptoms that you went to the doctor asking for help? I don't think that today people will hear their doctors say take wine for a particular disease or chronic condition, except actually for the health benefits. They say that it provides as an antioxidant to your system. Continuing on with Hahnemann, he says, by bitter substances and heating condiments, he tries to strengthen and warm the chronically weak and cold stomach. But in the secondary action of these palliatives, which are stimulating in their primary action only, the stomach becomes yet more inactive. Long-standing deficiency of vital heat and chilly disposition ought surely to yield to prescriptions of warm baths, but still more weak, cold, and chilly do the patients subsequently become. And Vera yesterday, or the last session she was on, did explain how when you go into the nice warm tub, when you come out, you start to shiver. It's like when you go to the pool. Have you, anybody else gone to the swimming pool and you dip your toe into the water and it's really very, very cold, at least feels cold to you from the air, and then you go in it and you get used to it, and then when you lift up your body from outside the water, that wind or the air then it feels very, very chilly to you. So it's a reverse type of action depending on what environment you're immersing your body in. And he's obviously telling us this is not the way to deal with these types of symptoms. And since this aphorism 59 is rather long, I'll continue on a little bit further with it, with all of these different examples he's providing for us in the different parts of our body or the different conditions that we deal with on a regular basis. He says, quote, severely burnt parts feel instantaneous alleviation from the application of cold water, but the burning pain afterwards increases to an incredible degree, and the inflammation spreads and rises to a still greater height. And this comes from Vide introduction. By means of the sternutatory remedies that provoke a secretion of mucus, coryza, with stoppage of the nose of long standing is sought to be removed, but it escapes observation that the disease is aggravated all the more by these antagonistic remedies in their secondary action. And again, I personally experienced doing the nasal drops, the antihistamines that open up the congested nasal passages. And it even says on the label, only do this for like 3 days, because if you continue taking these types of drops to your nose, to the nasal mucous tissues, it will cause aggravation. And they're totally aware of it. He says that it escapes observation. No, it today to me it says no, it doesn't escape observation. It's written in all of the labels, the little packages that you open the drugs and take out thousand words to read of side effects. But what they're doing is they're I don't know what they're doing. Is anybody listening to me today? Okay. So truly, we're aware of it. They're aware of it. The question is, what are they doing about it? And anyway, the nose becomes still more stopped, says Hahnemann, and this is totally true. I guess I'm imagining somebody sniffing up, perhaps in his day people were sniffing cocaine or something into their nose, and, you know, oh, I should really do a big blog about that, because there are many people, even young people today, who are addicted to these types of drugs, and it totally corrodes their nasal passages. So it may feel good to begin with, but after a while, it's very detrimental, and not just to the nose, to the entire being of that human being. Okay, and then he continues on, by electricity and galvanism, which in their primary action greatly stimulate muscular action, chronically weak and almost paralytic limbs were soon excited to more active movements. And I'm going to check how much time we have on the for the show so that we can... Okay, we're coming up to the close. Let me finish up here. So by electricity and galvanism, which in their primary action greatly stimulate muscular action, chronically weak and almost paralytic limbs were soon excited to more active movements. But the consequence, again, the secondary action, was complete deadening of all muscular irritability and complete paralysis. So we're very familiar with a remedy such as causticum, which is very caustic in nature and does cause it alleviates paralysis. So we are using the principle of similars. And Hahnemann continues on and on for more and more, a couple more examples. But since we are coming just about to the close of the show, and I am on my own today, I think I will just say, Hahnemann, thank you, thank you, thank you for being here, for teaching us to always remember to pay attention to what we have in front of our eyes and in front of our nose and all of our senses, that we can take a lesson from nature, use our observational skills, and study the organon and homeopathic methods and principles. And he really gives us a how-to book. I want to reiterate that and tell you that please open your organon and read it. You can always download the archives from all of our shows, and you can put them onto your iTunes, wherever you are. And so until the next time, continue with your prayers for the people in Pakistan. Hopefully we'll get a show up and talk to some people to give us a bird's eye view on site and let us know what's going on and if there is any place they recommend giving. Well, thank you everyone for listening, and I'll see you tomorrow. Bye-bye now.
Thank you for listening to Who's Reading the Organon? With homeopaths Vera Resnick and Debbie Brook on Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio. Remember to take the Organon off the shelf and read it.